Welcome to Eating is a Lifestyle with registered dietitians Toby Page
and Meredith Kleinhens. If you are stressed about food and nutrition, we are here for you. We will talk about real life examples of how to eat well and enjoy life with food.
Along the way, we'll break down stigmatizing diet culture. We'll share our stories and evidence-based information so you can make the best decisions for yourself and the ones you love. This podcast is not intended to replace medical advice, and we strongly recommend you talk to a registered dietitian if you have any concerns about your diet or your relationship with food.
Thank you for joining us. I think it's pretty casual, but do we have one of us that's the lead on this or not? I don't really remember what we were doing with that.
Well, no, I just thought that since last time we talked about eating in moderation and how do I do that? How do I know what moderation is? And we talked a lot about trusting your body's sense of hunger and fullness. And, you know, it's like, just go with it. And when I was re-listening to it and to do our editing, I thought, you know, we should probably talk about like what this whole thing about hunger and fullness, because those are big feelings, to feel hungry and to feel full and satisfied. Like, how do we really know we're there? And the people that I work with, a lot of people have been through things in their past that have brought them to where they're really not in touch with that so much anymore. So, I thought, let's talk about what is this thing called hunger and fullness? Like, what does that feel like? How do we know? And, you know, working with different folks, I've definitely seen that there's different types of hunger.
Absolutely. Well, let me start with, what is hunger? It's a feeling of discomfort or weakness caused by a lack of food coupled with the desire to eat. That's what the definition is, you know, if we look that up.
Okay, so I'm uncomfortable, I want food, and I want to eat. So what does wanting food feel like? What's it feel like to you?
Oh, these are where the Mad Libs adjectives come out, right? Like the gurgling, the gnawing, aching, hangry.
Okay, so I start with the idea that are you hungry is not a yes or no question. And that we experience these feelings more on a spectrum or a scale. And so I do use a hunger fullness scale in my practice. And, you know, by the time we're at gnawing and gurgling and hangry, that is what I call like a zero. You know, that is like, people better watch out, because that is a bad place for me to be. And that's pretty urgent place. But before I get to that place, there's some signs and signals that maybe I should be getting something to eat before I end up in that place. So I guess I'll just describe for you how I describe my hunger scale.
Yeah.
Okay. So the hungry part of the scale is a 0 to 5, and 0 is absolutely starving. Don't talk to me. I'm going to push you down and take your food. 5 is more like a take it or leave it. You know, I don't need to eat right now. I wasn't really thinking about it, but if you're telling me now's my chance, and I'm not going to get to, then sure, I could eat. But I don't really need to. If I'm a 4, I've been saying that I'm sitting in an airport and somebody walks over and hands me a lunch, and I say, oh, thanks. I want to eat this on the plane. So if I'm a four, I'm like, well, I don't actually want to eat this right now, but I know it's coming soon. I don't want to wait until we land. If I'm a three, I'm going to eat my lunch right then and there. That's just a calm, happy, oh, thank you. Thank you for bringing me lunch. If I'm home by myself, I'm going to wander into the kitchen and prepare myself something to eat. If I'm a two or a one, there's a bit more urgency. I might be telling other people about it. Hey, I'm hungry. Let's go. We need to go get something to eat. I start feeling more anxious. If I'm home alone, I might wander into my kitchen and just start shoving food items into my mouth without taking the time to prepare something because I'm feeling so urgent.
Right, you're feeding that biological need at that point and not caring what the choices are because you just need energy right now. Yeah.
Right. I always think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And, you know, if we're hungry and our basic needs of food are not met, then social relationships take a back seat. And it's hard to be nice when we're that hungry.
I
So
usually say like shoe leather looks good when you get that hungry. But really,
those.
it's probably not shoe leather. It's probably sugar because your body is wanting those carbohydrates, and that is a simple way to get them.
Fruit leather. So,
Or
yeah,
cake
that's
if that's on the counter and you're too
a. For,
hungry.
so, you know, that is actually something that we talk about too, is that when we're at that place where we're feeling hangry and rushed and urgent, sort of that anxious feeling because we're hungry, then that is really our brain saying, hey, I need some energy, and you need to stop what you're doing and get me some energy. And biologically, it makes sense that we would go for the simplest carbohydrates out there because that's the quickest way to get the brain energy. And it also makes sense that we would like those carbohydrates to come with a good dose of fat. Are a nice rich source of energy, right? So all of a sudden, potato chips are the perfect food when we're that hungry. So it kind of makes sense that when we allow ourselves to get that hungry, we do usually make choices that are quick carbs, high fat snack foods.
I think a lot of people can relate to that. But let's,
Mac and
do you want to talk
cheese.
a little bit about the different types of hunger? You kind of address them in your scale, I think, which is pretty fantastic that it's built into there. Like, there's practical hunger, like you were mentioning, where it's really more about planning ahead. Oh, we've got this, that, and the other tonight. So I'm not real hungry right now, but if I don't eat right now, I have 2 hours of community meetings and I'll be really ravenous by then. So working that in when you're on your, what did you say? Maybe you're a four or a three or a four, making it work because you're thinking ahead.
For sure. And I've, you know, being in tune with the idea that, oh, I'm probably gonna get hungry in the middle of my kid's soccer game, and being prepared for that, saying, okay, instead of ignoring it and saying, oh, well, gosh, no wonder we're so hungry by the time we get home from our activities. You know, maybe planning that in, planning that snack in there so that you don't end up down there at a two or a one. But having a snack at a four might help keep you even keeled.
Right. What other types of hunger that do you end up talking with your clients about?
Well, you know, I think the physical hunger is one that we spend a lot of time on because people have come so far away from their sense. Their physical sense of hunger. I was alluding to the idea of emotional hungers and hungers for needs, unmet needs in other areas that seem to be fulfilled in the moment by certain foods.
Right, in the short term, we're using food to address feelings, but they really ultimately can't be resolved with food, you know, being bored, stressed, angry, lonely, those types of things.
Right. And when we, I usually like to start off with physical need for food, because especially when people are trying to lose weight, they will do different things, usually undereat in the first part of the day in some way, shape, or form. And they become very hungry. Talking to people about being physically hungry and having that tangled up with an emotional. Okay, so it's imagine we have a single woman who is at home. She's by herself. She's watched her TV show, and it's kind of boring and lonely. And my doctor has, her doctor has recommended that she lose some weight. And so she's sitting at home and she's trying to manage her dinner to be nice, small, low calorie, low fat dinner that includes some vegetables. And she eats that, and regardless of her sense of satiety, she says, "That's how much I'm supposed to eat." And then she sits down, and it gets lonely. And you think, you know what would be really fun, and it would make me feel pretty happy, is to go and enjoy some of those sweet treats that I have in the pantry. And you go get the sweet treats, and you're like, wow, this is really, really good. And then you find where you can't really stop, or it's really hard to stop because these are really good. They are making you feel really happy. And your brain is saying, thank you, we didn't get enough at dinner. And
Right.
so I call that tangled up. That's emotions tangled up with actual biological need for food. And how can we address those emotions until we have resolved the biological need for food, need for fats, need for carbs, to fuel your brain so that you can better handle the emotional need?
That's a great description, Tangled, because it really is. And how do you navigate that on your own? That's why, shameless plug for dietitians, meeting with one to help parse that out.
Right. And I use Michelle May's mindful eating script. Michelle is great around, or I should call her Dr. May, is absolutely wonderful with mindful eating. And she's got this mindful eating script that I use all the time. And it actually has nothing to do with eating at all. But because I'm a dietitian, I get to apply it to eating all the time. Where she walks through the mindful eating script, and you start with, well, what is it that has triggered me to want to eat? And of course, after we've ruled out biological need for food, then we say, okay, you know what? It's actually this upsetting thing that happened today. Oh, okay. And then the next is what's so important is to identify really what is the feeling that I'm experiencing. What is this feeling? Because if we don't have a good name for the feeling, then it's really hard to address the feeling. So, like the word stressed. Stress is not a very descriptive word. If I come to you and I say, Meredith, I am so stressed, and you hand me a gift certificate for a massage because massages are good for stress, right? And I look at you and I say, well, I'm stressed because I have all these deadlines and my dog is at home sick and I need to take care of him. And I can't go get a massage right now. So it wasn't very helpful for me to tell you I'm stressed because you didn't know how to help me. So identifying the feeling that you're having can kind of help direct you to what do I actually need, which is the next step. The other thing about naming your feeling, what's kind of cool about that on like a neurobiological level, is that the part of your brain that experiences feelings and emotions is on one side, and your language is on the other side. And so when you name your emotion, you have just crossed the midline of your brain. And so if you know anything about brain neuropsychology, crossing the midline is a good thing and a helpful thing. And so by naming your emotion, you have essentially pushed a pause button on the emotion and said, oh, pause. Let's think about this and move it around to a different part of my brain. So already you've taken a step towards resolving your problem.
Fantastic. I
Right?
don't have the opportunity. It's so fun to talk about this because I just don't really get the opportunity to talk. My population has dementia, and so that just changes the game in so
Yeah.
many ways. So it's really fun to get to explore this topic with you.
So, when something happens, I feel, name the feeling, push pause. The next step is I need. And the hardest part about this step is not jumping to the next step, which is the action that you will take. And so, really taking the moment to say, what is it that I need? And that can be one of the harder parts. I was working with someone today, and the trigger was concerns for a family member, and the feeling was helplessness. And it was like, gosh, well, what do I need in a time of helplessness? And so really digging into, well, what is it that can help me, like, in the moment when I'm feeling helpless, what do I need? And we dug and dug, and we decided that what she needed was acceptance of the situation and a warm, loving acceptance rather than a cold, distancing me on one side, accepting you on the other side, but an accepting. And it was just like, oh, wow. Oh, I don't even, it was like a weight was lifted to really connect what is it that I need with what's the feeling I'm having. So then we had to work a little bit longer to help her figure out, well, what should I do then? Because, yeah, here I am and the Oreos are right there. And it's great that I have, figured out what I need to soothe this feeling, but what can I do about it? And so those steps can be really difficult to take. So again, another plug for dietitians and therapists to walk through those steps with folks, because it's hard.
You scratch the surface and realize this is a deep reason I'm reaching for the box of Oreos
Yeah.
rather than taking the time to reflect and find that out.
And I will say that people are so resilient. when they discover these things, because I do get to work with people who are on the journey to find those things, and they're hard when we find them. They're it's not a not an easy discovery, but they are so resilient, and it really gives them strength to have these tools to say, I know what to do to take care of myself rather than just bury myself in Oreos.
Amazing.
Yeah. So we started off talking about hunger and how can we tell and how can we trust our bodies. And so that was more of a physical type of hunger, which makes me so curious about, working with folks with dementia. How well connected are they with their sense of hunger and fullness and satiety?
It really depends on how far into the dementia they are. I really liken it to the beginning of life when, as new parents, it's torture, right? Is my baby getting enough? Are they too full? Are they hungry? Are they what? And there are cues that our infants give us. Turning the head away, spitting it out, those kinds of things. And when dementia is very, very, very advanced, those are also the cues. When folks don't open their mouth when a spoon is placed near their lips, or they're not, their brain might not be able to tell them to trigger a swallow, so they're holding food in their mouth, or they're pocketing the food, we call it, when it's, built up in their cheeks and things. Those muscles also get weaker, right? So that's dysphagia, and maybe they're going to need thickened liquids, or they're going to need puree food because their signals and their body functioning is slowing down. And so their need for food declines as they are declining. Dementia is a terminal illness. We don't necessarily think of it that way, but it is. And I also have the range of people who are constantly hungry. They don't remember they've eaten. They'll forget 5 minutes after, and they are food seeking. So that can be a challenge from the standpoint of weight gain and how does that impact their mobility or caregivers' ability to care for them if they're not ambulatory. And there's really a range. So, the way that I kind of help folks in dementia is there are no good or bad foods. And it's what they are able to eat and willing to eat. And that can be really hard for families, especially. Actually, I had someone who's, they were vegetarian for a really long time. And he moved to a memory care unit. And finally, the wife, kind of gave them permission to have him eat meat because he couldn't remember his previous choices and he was enjoying everything on the plate. And so letting go of these things,
Oh,
because that
wow.
chapter has ended, he's in a new chapter. And a lot of times I'm helping families be okay that they're not getting vegetables, they're not getting fruit, or they only want this thing or that thing. And we really have to let that person lead the way with what they want to eat because we're trying to protect them from losing weight, which means losing muscle, which means falling more. And then that can result in, a hip fracture, which is not a good sign for longevity. So,
So your concerns with your population are more about them not eating enough
mostly.
most of the time, and it's hard to tell if they're hungry or not, or if they are just not in touch with that. That would be hard, the folks I work with have been brought away from their hunger fullness cues for different reasons. Mostly restrictive dieting, I would say, is the number one reason why my population, my folks, it's not that they can't tell hunger or fullness or satisfaction. It's just never really been on the radar, which I find fascinating. And I always joke around. I put down Weight Watchers all the time. I think they have great nutrition science, and so they do teach solid nutrition information. They leave out a few things. One of those things is how to be satisfied. They don't really care if you're still hungry. That there's
Did
no
you get
part
your
in their
points?
program.
It's about the points.
It's about the points, and in no part of their program are they concerned with, do you feel full? if you're hungry, eat this zero calorie, 0 point thing, which probably won't make you feel any less hungry at all. I'm thinking Jell-O. Like, did anybody feel more full from eating Jell-O?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
Maybe if it had the fruit in it and the cream cheese with the whipped cream from.
Love that on a graham cracker crust.
Well, should we talk
Okay.
about the other part of the scale, which is fullness, and yeah,
Yeah.
orient us to your scale.
Sure. Okay. So the other side of the scale. 7 is perfectly satisfied. I don't wish for another bite. If I had any more, I'd be too full, which is an 8. If I kept eating, I would end up a 9, very full. If I kept on eating after that, I would might end up at 10, which is miserable. I need to lay down. This hurts. I've been there on Thanksgiving. So I do like to remind people there is an 8 and a 9 between satisfied and that absolute stuffed. So kind of like down there on the hungry end. Hungry doesn't have to be that absolute starving, right? Six is an interesting one because if I'm a 6, then this is like, okay, I ate my soup and half a sandwich for lunch. I can get back to work and keep working. But if you walked up to me with some fresh baked sourdough and some butter, I would be more than happy to add that to my lunch. I call 6 not quite satisfied, where I want just a little bit more. Or maybe it's I finish my chicken breast with rice pilaf and broccoli, and a hunk of cheese just sounds really good. So it's just that little last bit that would just make me feel satisfied. And I will say that fullness is to me a little harder to nail down than hunger. Like if I'm hungry, I'm like, yep, I'm hungry. And if I'm really hungry, I'm like, yep, I'm really hungry. And so hunger for me is just different degrees of yes. But fullness to me has there's different places in my body that I feel full and satisfied. I can be full in my stomach if I had a giant bowl of oranges, but I might still be looking for something because I'm not satisfied. So being full but not satisfied is kind of a funny place to be on that scale. There's a lot of things that influence fullness because if I don't have my big four, and especially if I don't have my fiber on board, then I'm probably not going to notice that I've had enough until I've eaten a lot more than I needed. The example I always use is if I gave you 1,000 calories worth of Goldfish crackers, you'd probably still be hungry because goldfish crackers do not make people feel full, and it doesn't really matter how many goldfish crackers you eat. You probably don't want any more after 1,000 calories worth of them, but you'd still maybe be interested in something else to eat because it's just not that filling. So there's that kind of weird place of being full too. Like, I don't want any more goldfish crackers, but I kind of want a hamburger, right?
Yeah, it's kind of going back to that satisfying, like, what does your body need when you're hungry? And can you honor that as close as you can? Yes, energy-wise, the goldfish will get you there, but you needed some protein and some fat too to really anchor yourself.
You know, I think it's fascinating how much our bodies actually, or our chemistry makes us go get the thing we needed. It is absolutely fascinating to me that, and I watch my husband do this. If we have a really low fat, light dinner, he's going to want ice cream. If we have a small, higher fat dinner, he's gonna want popcorn. And I just think it's so funny because it's like his body just knows what was missing and made his brain think about going and getting that piece and having it. To him, he's like, well, I like ice cream and I like popcorn. But what makes you choose it at that particular moment?
Yeah, I think about to our body tuning into what we need, you know, if anyone goes camping or they go backpacking and you bring specific foods because they've got a longer shelf life, all that stuff, and by the end of it, what you want is fresh food. And I remember the guy who solo trekked across Antarctica, he had these, you know, he had foods that were specifically designed for his metabolism, right? It was all these bars and whatever, and it was everything he needed. And the interviewers were asking him, you know, what was the first thing you wanted to eat when you got back? And he's like, a salad, because he'd been
Vegetables.
eating dry, low water content food, and he just couldn't wait to have fresh, crisp things.
Yeah,
So
for
yeah, if you
sure.
listen, your body can tell you.
And we talked earlier about needing the quick carbs. When our blood sugar is lower because it's been so long since we've eaten, our bodies say, hey, go get me a rich source and a quick carbs. That's when I want those goldfish crackers. When I'm really hungry. Awesome. Well, I think that tuning into our sense of hunger and fullness is really the foundation of mindful eating, not being distracted, of understanding how much we need, when we need food, maybe what other reasons are driving us for food. So it's all part of that awareness about yourself. But am I hungry is not a yes or no question. And how full are you is maybe a bigger question than a yes or no question too.
Way to wrap that up for us. Thank you. Yeah, and I think having your scale for people to reference will be really helpful. And
Yeah,
you
cool.
just start to, it's like learning a language, right? You start to, what is that? What does a six mean to me? Figuring that out.
Yeah, a lot of times I'll have people make their own scales. So, those are the numbers that I came up with and how I describe them. But to sit down and say, okay, what does it feel like to me when I'm a six? What does it feel like to me when I'm a seven? And kind of discerning between those things for yourself and knowing, okay, I'm starting to get hungry. I know this feeling. I've thought about it before. I've noticed it before, and I can recognize it. So I definitely encourage people to make their own hunger fullness scale based on their own feelings and find that happy place.
Yeah, and once you've learned that language, it kind of gets internalized to yourself, and it's not like you're referring to a piece of paper all the time, but you're like, oh yeah, I'm kind of a five right now, or a two. I'm getting to be a two. I better address this, you know.
I don't know, you'd be surprised. Like I've worked with people that think that this hunger fullness scale is probably the most powerful tool they've gotten from me, and they, have it posted on the refrigerator, and they just every time they think about eating, they walk up and go, "Oh, where am I? Oh, okay, I'm not in the hungry zone. This is something else." So it can be a nice little reminder of what you're
Yeah, it
doing
could be a
there.
touch point. Yeah,
All right,
for
well,
sure.
I don't know what we'll talk about next time, but maybe it'll trigger after I listen to this. I did, by the way, buy your book today.
You did? Thank
I
you.
did. Or yesterday or whenever it was.
Thank you for joining us today. We are here to share our stories and our expertise with you so that you can eat well, stress less about food, and find smarter, not harder ways to nourish yourself and the ones you love.
If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or anything you'd like to share, send us an email or connect with us on social media. Links are all in the show notes.
Connect with Meredith on her blog, savvydietitian.com.
Download the Eating is a Lifestyle app now, available in the App Store. You can help us spread these messages by telling a friend about this podcast and sharing on social media.
Until next time, eat well and enjoy your life with food too.